Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. We'll talk to Terry Savage coming up in just a minute. Janet Yellen was on Capitol Hill today sorting things out when it comes to interest rates. Scott Kleinberg along a little bit later to talk about what's going on in social media. And then, as I said, we're featuring businesses ahead of Valentine's Day this weekend. Kate Coffey, the founder and owner of Chocolate Twist, will be in. Dolly McCarthy's traffic report, did you hear her say, was sponsored by Burger King and that Butter Burger. Wow, the big news today is Burger King says it's going to start selling hot dogs. I'm not sure about that. Terry Savage is on a phone line. Would you have a hot dog at Burger King, Terry?
I don't know. I happen to like hot dogs. But yeah, it's very interesting. Hot dogs have a different formula around the country. And it's going to be very hard to standardize a hot dog that appeals seriously, in a business sense, to different regional tastes.
You know, that's a great point.
I'm a big hot dog fan.
You know, because sort of like potato chips used to be that way, where every major city had its own potato chip brands, its individual brands. Town to town.
They might run into it. In Chicago, we're used to, the typical Vienna hot dog. That's really a signature of Chicago.
Right.
But But, you know, we'll see if Burger King can pull that off.
I know you didn't say the typical Vienna hot dog. What you meant to say was the preeminent hot dog, the Vienna hot dog.
It is. That's the Chicago hot dog. That is the Chicago hot dog. So, but it definitely has a different flavor profile. And I learned that when I went to college. I went to the University of Michigan, and they served hot dogs on Sundays. And I was just so anxious. And every time I bit into one, I went, oh, my God, this is terrible. So even from here to Ann Arbor, the profile of a flavor changes.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
What they know.
We'll have to see what
they
do.
Now, here's what people don't get used to. I just posted a column. I really want to get right to it about chicken money.
Oh, yeah.
Janet Yellen sitting there trying to explain to Congress why a month ago the Fed thought the economy was growing so strongly that it was a perfect time to raise interest rates. And in the meantime, interest rates around the world are going lower and lower, and now even below zero. There are countries like not only now Japan, but in Germany and in Scandinavia that have negative interest rates. In fact, there is $6 trillion worth of government bonds from countries around the world that carry negative interest rates. You heard me. That means you're paying them to hold on to your money in banks and government bonds.
More than 15% of economies in the world have allowed their central banks to move interest rates to negative territory. So that means that if I deposit $100 in the bank's going to charge me to hold the money.
Exactly. You know, you can understand it in Switzerland, because anyway, the old legend of Swiss banking secrecy, you might want to pay the banks to keep your money, especially if you come from a country where it could be confiscated. And that was traditional with Swiss banks, not to pay very much. And for many recent years, not paying any interest or negative. But now it's a conscious effort by central banks around the world to lower their interest rates, therefore lowering the value of their currency, therefore making their exports appear cheaper to countries, for instance, that pay in dollars, and China has been pretty closely linked to the dollar until recently, and so that they can stimulate their economies. They want their currencies to be less attractive, and what makes it less attractive? No or low interest rates. But negative interest rates is something quite else again, and it gives you a feel, especially in Europe and in Japan, the concern about how slow business is and what these country central banks will do to resort to trying to stimulate their economies. Get the money out of the banks, because who wants to pay a bank to hold your money, to get it actively invested in building things in the economy? And it's not working anywhere. And now Janet Yellen's sitting there trying to explain to Congress why 3 weeks ago they raised interest rates and had announced more or less plans to do it again and again this year, and now they can't do it. And this has huge implications for all our listeners. This is not some theoretical economic concept that I'm spouting off about. This has to do with your chicken money, the money you have set aside because you don't want to take risk with it. And I am getting a stream, Steve, a stream of posts on my blog at terrysavage.com. Should I buy this? Should I buy these commercial real estate pools? Should I buy this annuity? Should I buy this loan package? because everybody's looking for higher yields, and they do not understand how much higher the risk is, even than the yields that they're being promised.
Tell me about some of these products, because you write about the online lending clubs and things like that. The idea is that people with savings account, they're not getting anything. They don't want to do too much risk, but they want to increase their interest in one way or another. And it sounds as if, I think you just said, that maybe they're being lured into something that's riskier than they thought.
Exactly. Not only riskier than you thought, but riskier than you're being paid the interest to take. You may say, well, sure, I know it pays 6%. It must be a little more risky. But some of these things ought to be paying you far more, except that the promoters who are promoting these packages of loans, these pools of money, these quote deals, are actually taking a lot of fees off the top for themselves. So that lowers the yield beyond what you're even being paid. And you should be paying more to take that kind of risk. But first, let's get the concept of chicken money. It's money you cannot afford to lose. Remember the mantra of the chicken money investor. I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as I am about the return
of my money.
Okay. You got me. All know that. I heard everybody saying it along, listening in car radios everywhere.
You're just like Donald. You got me repeating just like Donald Trump. Who's going to build the wall? Mexico is going to build the wall.
Well, you all know that. But you go, oh, I know, but now I have to dig into my principal, especially seniors who plan to live on the interest, are going, I'm going to have to eat into my money just to live. So it's more terrifying to see that it seems to be the people that they're going to eat a little into their money. They think they've got all their money still when they're getting these higher returns. But if the economy slows down, if we have a recession, these commercial loan pools, for instance, these are loans that banks won't make. So they tell you, well, we're pulling them all together. We're spreading the risk. It's a big pool. We haven't had any defaults. They're paying higher rates. This is what you want to do. Well, wait till we have a recession. And some of those loans go bad. Not all of them, maybe. A lot of bank loans are today. And how about these that aren't even bank loans? When are you going to get your money back and how much of it? And will it pay you to have earned 6% for 6 months or a year? When you suddenly find a hunk of your money you just can't get at?
That's Terry Savage. We're going to take a break, Terry. Come back. And I want to ask you about 401ks, too, when people switch jobs.
Okay.
I know you've written about that. Terry Savage, you can read more of what she has to say at terrysavage.com. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the next half hour, Scott Kleinberg will be here to talk about social media issues with the Chicago Tribune. Janet Yellen was on Capitol Hill earlier today.
The FOMC anticipates that economic conditions will evolve in a manner that will warrant only gradual increases in the federal funds rate.
That's crystal clear, isn't it? Terry Savage is here to explain that. Terry... Do they go to obfuscation class? Is that what it is?
They do. It's a trait that required to be Fed chairman.
I think so.
I mean, Paul Volcker, remember the smoke rings that he used to blow with his cigar? People would try and interpret those.
All right.
But they're in a tough spot. Can't raise rates. Economies around the world are slowing, and the money will all come here, and it's not working. In fact, our interest rates are lower. 10-year treasuries are significantly about a quarter of a point lower, down to below 1.75%.
We've got a couple of minutes. I want to talk about your 401k piece before we run out of time, all right? So,
let's just say this. There are some basic principles when you're dealing with your money. I call them savage truths, and one of them is sometimes the most difficult thing to do to get yourself to do is usually the most right thing to do. For instance, it's very difficult when you're at work to discipline yourself to keep putting money in the stock market in your 401k plan when it's going down. That's the right thing. It's difficult to keep your money on the side in chicken money and bank CDs when it's paying no interest, or maybe you'll be paying the bank. But it's right to have cash on the sideline because it lets you stick to the rest of your plan. And it's difficult because of just the ordinary difficulties and hassles to think about moving your 401k plan when you leave a job or retire, but that is the thing you must do.
Right, so the idea is...
The
idea is, look, it was working fine where I was there when I was working there. Why won't it continue to work fine if I go work somewhere else?
Exactly, but there's a bunch of reasons. Look, you have a few choices. You can leave the money in your former employer's plan. That complicates your record keeping. You'll probably forget to look at it and probably forget to to when you're organizing, how much do I have in stocks, how much do I have in this category and that, it's more difficult to do. You could roll it into the plan at your new job, or you could roll it into an IRA at a mutual fund company or financial advisor. One thing you don't want to do is withdraw the cash. But if you're retiring particularly, it's probably right to roll it over to a place like Fidelity or Vanguard or T. Rowe Price for a number of reasons. When you roll over that kind of money, they're going to give you free investment advice, not only about how to be invested now, but pretty soon you're going to have to start withdrawing. They understand how to advise retirees on creating a plan so that your money lasts as long as you do. And they'll also help you calculate your minimum required distributions. And they've got the kind of mutual funds that are more appropriate for people in retirement than the ones likely in your 401k plan, which are there for younger workers to grow their money.
I want to ask you about something you wrote, and this applies, I think, to everyone. I've wondered about this. You say you don't have to keep all your investments with one custodian. In other words, you can have a couple of different advisors' offices with different chunks of money. Is that a wise thing? I mean, I'm wondering if there are more fees involved that way, or if it's better because there is more than one set of eyes on your money, or how do you assess all that?
Well, so that's very interesting. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, I mean, I've always had, just to get all their shareholder communications for many years, accounts at Fidelity and Vanguard and T. Rowe Price and American Century. Well, those are all no load, no commission, low-cost investment companies. And it's my job then to keep watch for it. If you're going to pay an investment advisor, then you will let that investment advisor diversify. And that advisor may use funds from various companies. You hope you're only paying fees to the advisor and that the advisor is choosing low-cost mutual funds. So what I'm saying is there's no law that says you have to put it all in one place. But being scattered with little amounts of money here and there keeps you from thinking clearly about your money and how it's invested. So you might want to do the rollover. And please, the last word on this is never take the check from your old plan. Contact your new custodian, a Fidelity, a Vanguard financial planner. Let them handle the paperwork so you don't wind up in a spot where you're paying taxes or penalties in taxes because you didn't do the rollover correctly.
Good point. I thought maybe I'd just lose the check or spend the money, but there's also the tax implication. Terry Savage.
Oh, yes, and a 10% penalty if you're below 59.5. So that is the worst decision you can make. You're not only losing the money to taxes and penalties, but all the future tax-deferred growth of your money. Pay attention to those old 401ks. This is a good time to get organized.
Check out the column. It's at terrysavage.com. Terry, nice to talk to you again today.
Good to talk with you, Steve.
All right, we'll talk next week. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Wednesday afternoon, and typically on Wednesday afternoons around this time, Scott Kleinberg is in the studio from the Chicago Tribune, writes about social media, and turns out this is a typical Wednesday. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, just a little behind-the-scenes things here. We have six or seven different topics we might bring up, and talking to Scott during the news about what he wanted, and he placed emojis like down six or seven, so I don't know what
that
means.
This time only.
Yeah, and we're also talking about you're going to go have a hot dog at Burger King?
I might have to try it just to see what it's all about. Apparently, that's a thing.
It's Lent now, so a lot of people aren't eating meat. And
yeah,
there was a chain that had a fish witch.
Fish witch.
A fish witch. And I think that was Burger King back in the day, before the Whaler.
The whale. I remember the Whaler,
right.
Yeah.
And we got the filet of fish, but somewhere there was a fish witch. I don't know where that was. All right, enough of that. Let's talk about Facebook. Now, I have a new iPhone I bought in the fall, picked up in the fall, and I'm really, one of the first things I noticed from my older iPhone was the battery life lasted a lot longer. That's because the battery's better or just because the sludge is gone?
In that case, the battery's bigger, and that has a lot to do with the amount of time that it lasts. Yeah.
But it's always a struggle to keep the battery charged.
Always.
And there've been people looking at what apps drain more, right, and what you can get rid of to save your battery?
Yep. Yep, and apparently the strangest thing is it's Facebook that's causing these problems. And the Guardian in London did a test, and they found out that if you delete the Facebook app from your iPhone and you use the Facebook website instead, the mobile website, you save 15 to 20% on your battery life.
Run that by me again. You get rid of the app.
You get rid of the app, and you open your browser, your Safari browser, your Chrome browser, and you go to Facebook.com, and you use the mobile version of the browser, which is separate from the app, and you can save 15 to 20% on your battery life. I was curious because I often check the settings to find out how much battery my apps are using just in case one's going crazy. And I don't find 15 to 20% of an app to be crazy, but saving it is important. And it turns out usually on any given day, anywhere between 15 and 20%, it shows up. 18% is usually where I'm at.
Is the app much friendlier than going online?
The app is friendlier. The app does more. I like the I definitely like the app more. You can tag photos. You can't tag very well on the website. To a lot of people, 15 to 20% is the difference between using an app and using a browser. And I completely get that.
I remember my old phone. I mean, it would be right about at Morton Grove on the train line. When it would start to go.
When you know where it is, I mean, that's like super helpful.
20% might have gotten me all the way up to Lake Cook Road. I would have been much better off.
There you go.
So Starbucks is out with these holiday drinks. Valentine's Day drinks.
Yes.
And I'm not sure why, but they're lighting up social media this week.
They're lighting up social media because they're limited edition, which in itself wouldn't light up social media, but they last they're like 7 days. They started this past Monday and they only go through Valentine's Day, or at least that's what they're planning on right now. Whether they come back to the menu at some point, I don't know, but they're molten chocolate. So it's like bittersweet chocolate in a latte. So it's like a very, very strong mocha. And, you know, just to have something that limited is very strange for Starbucks.
The molten chocolate latte, the molten chocolate frappuccino, and the molten hot chocolate.
Yes.
Okay, does that mean it's got like a hunk of oozing chocolate in it?
For the most part, it's like bittersweet chocolate chips that are like mixed in at the bottom of the cup, and then they mix it up. And yeah, it's like a very, very intense chocolate flavor.
So good for them. They put this out. They put it out limited, and they're getting a lot of buzz on social media.
They're getting a lot of buzz. I think they got a lot more buzz simply because they said hurry now through Valentine's Day, which is a lot different than hurry now through April 1st.
Right.
And I really think that's what's causing it to light up on social.
That reminds me, because we talked last week about I forget who the company was. Was it Doritos with the hashtag?
Yeah, for the Super Bowl.
For the Super Bowl, for the Twitter. And you talked about how they wanted a positive response. Now, there was another company. Yep. Was it Esurance that did a big retweet? There was one that kept saying, do the retweet, do the retweet.
Yeah, that sounds like Esurance. I remember something like that. But yeah.
I know when I saw it watching the game, I'm like, oh, this is what Scott Kleinberg talks about. This is a way for people to get them there to do the retweet with the Esurance.
Exactly. You have to find a positive message. When you go out there and you give somebody a blank slate, because people like to do things like,
tell us what you think,
underline, and people are like, well, I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. Right. That's what you don't want to do.
Did you look at the Doritos feed at all?
I looked at some of them, and there were lots of good tweets. I don't know that they picked the actual winner as of yet, but there were plenty of bad tweets. And I mean, obviously they're going to skip over those. But the amount of good obviously was a lot higher because of the contest.
It was interesting, too, at the Super Bowl. This must have been an NFL spot where they talked about abuse. And
yes,
there was a woman using,
and
she was texting.
Yes.
Using social media in a way. I mean, it's more direct than that, but sort of incorporating all of that into fighting abuse.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I know that's powerful. Something that Twitter continues to focus on, and they're setting up some sort of new council or something.
They're setting up the Twitter Trust and Safety Council. This is something that when people complain about Twitter, they complain about two things. They complain about it being difficult to use. They complain about the amount of abuse. And Twitter has said that they're trying really, really hard to fight this.
When it comes to abuse, you mean just abusive language or picking on?
Abusive language, all that stuff. Yeah. Bullying, picking on, just terrible things. And this Twitter Trust and Safety Council is new. It's like 40 different academic groups and companies, and they're looking for a way to get input from people in terms of what they need to do to make the place safer. And I think it's a fantastic idea. I just don't know if a council in itself is enough to fight the problem. I think the problem is technological. I think they have to find a way to make it so these tweets can't get out there and can't get through. And spammers and people who do this kind of stuff, and the people who set up accounts just for these purposes, they're very, very smart and savvy.
I mean, we've seen that in just about every other way, right? If you try to stop them, they're going to find a way to get around it.
Yeah, they do that for every kind of spam. And this isn't necessarily spam in terms of the legal definition of spam. This is just stuff that you don't want to read and don't want to see. There's no way to filter it out right now. What they need to work on.
These are the mean girls on Twitter.
These are the very, very mean girls on Twitter.
Twitter, but they also made news last week, didn't they? They suspended, I think, 125,000 users.
That had to do with terrorism,
That fascinates me how, you know, in a one way, they're not responsible, but they're sort of I mean, they have a bit of a duty, maybe.
Yes.
So how you weigh that, and one of the things they said last week was that they've cut off 125,000 different users.
But one of the things, and that's fantastic, but one of the things that happens in those cases, it's not necessarily just Twitter shutting those off. They do. But they're people who are reporting it. There was one guy right before this happened who talked about it. He made it his passion to find these people and report it to Twitter because no one was doing anything.
At Twitter.
So, right. Yeah. So he was letting them know. He was going through and finding hundreds and hundreds of accounts and reporting them. And that's what social networks want. They want you to help and they want you to flag. It's not technically our job, but it's everyone's job because it has to be a safe environment for you and for everybody else.
Does Twitter have the wherewithal to check all of its posts?
That's the problem. No, I don't think any social network has the wherewithal to do that. I report things as a social media manager. I report things all the time, especially things
you
on
do.
Twitter
well,
and Facebook.
I
have to do that. I mean, it's not just my job. It's something I feel very strongly about. And I can't tell you how many times I send something into Facebook and they write back and they say, this is not, it's a form thing, but this is not a violation of our policy. Well, I guarantee you, if they had a team there that was really, truly strong enough, they would find it was a violation because there are things that are just absolutely terrible, but they have to go through it so quickly.
You came into the studio today with the weight lifted off your shoulder because it's easier for you to switch from one Instagram account to another.
It's the most simple, ridiculous thing that we should have had from day one, and we've been asking for it. And now that we finally have it, it's changed the world. I mean, if you administer more than one Instagram account.
How many people have more than one Instagram account?
There's probably a bunch. There's probably quite a few. I have one for me, one for the company, and one for my dog.
I mean, I've got four. Really?
Yeah, three.
How often is your dog on Instagram?
Oh, very often. Well, now a lot more often. I mean, because she has the switching.
Easier,
not because
right?
of me. She has the switching. It's great.
All right, so that's just much more easily done. And so
yes, there's a setting, and it just says add account, and you can switch between them with the touch of one button.
All right, I'm gonna after the show, I'm going to find your dog on Instagram and follow her.
Her,
okay.
And she will follow you back.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune writes about social media. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is the Wednesday before Valentine's Day, and we're taking a look from time to time this week at different businesses that are impacted by Valentine's Day. I should say Kate Coffey is in the studio, the founder and owner of Chocolate Twist. Kate, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, no kidding. I was joking, but you must be really busy this week.
We are really busy this week, yeah. We have I have some great staff back at the kitchen, and they're hustling.
So when you're the business owner and it's a big week and then you get a call, I mean, obviously it's nice to be on the radio, right?
Sure, yeah.
But are you thinking, wow, I should really be back at the kitchen?
You know what? I have total faith and trust in my staff, and they do a great job, and they don't need my supervision. So
that tells me they must be listening right now.
I think they are. Hi, guys.
Tell me a little bit about Chocolate Twist.
So Chocolate Twist is my little business that I started in 2009, and we create small batch handcrafted confections, and we say for you to love, cherish, and eat with abandon, and no sharing.
I like what you write about Valentine's Day. I think it was on your blog about love and who do you love and how do you spend your love. And
yes.
You know, it's a nice thought when it comes to this Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Yeah.
Are you Kendall College educated?
Yes, I am.
How does that work? You know, that's one of those institutions in town, the culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
Might you have done it without Kendall?
You know, I think I probably
you know what
could
I'm asking?
Have.
You know?
I think I could have done it without Kendall, but I wouldn't suggest anybody do it that way. I think what culinary school does is it gives you a really nice, broad education. So I learned knife skills that I couldn't necessarily have learned without mm-hmm. somebody sort of standing over me, teaching me exactly how to do it. But also there's a camaraderie, and there's the relationships that you make at school really carry you through into your professional life.
Yeah, I never thought of it before you said that, but it's almost like it's maybe every institution, it's almost like its own incubator.
It really is. It really is. And you feed off of each other. And it's exciting to see where my classmates have gone to and what they've gone off to do.
Yeah. Do you ever compare and say, oh, I'm doing better than he is?
Never.
Come on.
I'm doing better than everyone.
On.
Are you kidding me?
So you went into non-for-profits for a while.
I did. Yes.
And what finally drove you? Was this sort of a dream always in your head?
You know, no, it's sort of, I started Chocolate Twist out of my house, and it just sort of grew on its own. about 6 months after I started it, I found out that I was getting divorced. And so I decided that I should make a go of it. And I did. And here we are a few years later and we're doing great.
Tell me about the products.
Yes.
I'm looking at what looks like a big pie, a chocolate. It's not a pie.
It's not
a pie.
It's
like a 4-inch disc of...
Yes. It's a Saigon Cinnamon Milk Chocolate Peanut Butter Cup, and it's about the size of your face. It's about 5 ounces.
I don't know how to take that. Keep it, go ahead.
It's delicious. It's really fun and quirky. The cinnamon is a surprise in the middle of it. People don't often associate cinnamon and peanut butter together, but they're two flavors that actually work really beautifully together.
So you're always working on different sorts of flavors?
Yeah, that's
best your passion?
Part of my job.
Is it really? Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
What's the one that you threw out?
Oh my gosh. I don't
right.
know.
There
we
must
haven't.
Be, there...
You know what? We've tried to make a peach once, and it didn't work. It just the peach didn't come through.
What's your proudest? Which one do you like the most?
You know what? I'm proudest of the ones I've named after my parents.
Yeah,
so the Papa Coffee candy bar is a coffee-infused caramel with a coffee-infused ganache. And we named it after my dad, Tom Coffee. And we've paired it this year with the Little Nona, which is named after my little tiny mother,
sweet, yeah.
who's listening right now and probably crying. Hi, Mom.
Funny, because we talked about Kendall teaching you knife skills. Your mother taught you to love to cook, didn't she?
She did, yes, yeah. yes. So I would, you know, as far back as I can remember, I would sit and watch my mom and my grandmother's cook.
Are you as good?
No one's ever as good as the people before them, right?
Let's talk about the business of it then, because here we are, Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. You're someone who strikes out on your own. You've got a staff. It's growing. Sales online and
yes.
in different shops and at markets and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is Valentine's Day sort of a make or break holiday for you the way Christmas is for some retailers?
Christmas is our big, big holiday.
Bigger than Valentine's Day.
Bigger than Valentine's Day. Because we don't have a storefront, our Valentine's orders are a little bit less intense than Christmas, but all of our retail partners are all looking for Valentine's gifts and Valentine's products. So we're busy about 2.5 weeks ago getting our retailers
getting it into the shops.
Lined up. Yeah, exactly. And so now we're busy with the last minute lovers who are getting their last minute things.
Maybe they're not last minute. Maybe they're brand new lovers.
Well, that's true.
Maybe something great happened last night and
that's
now they need
true.
Chocolate.
That's right? true. Oh my gosh, that'd be fun.
Is there a downtime for your business? I mean, is there a down season?
Summer, not too many people are thinking about chocolate in summer, but we really ramp up our markets in the summer. So we do a lot of farmers markets. Yep. So summer's a little bit quieter for us, but not by a lot. If we're doing our jobs right, we should have no quiet seasons, right?
Well, you know, it's okay to have a quiet season once in a while.
Well, I have next weekend off and I'm hoping nobody books me for anything.
So Kate, coffee's available next weekend if you need her.
Yes.
The founder and owner of Chocolate Twist. What's the website?
Chocolate-twist.com.
And go check it out because it's a lot of fun just to sort of surf around the site. Nice to meet you.
Nice
and,
to meet you.
I wish you continued success.
Thank you. Take some of these candies home for your betrothed.
Oh, I've already purchased extravagant gifts for my betrothed. Okay,
have
wait,
you?
I'll take those.
No, yeah.
You're listening
you.
To The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.